Well, first of all, special thanks to Career Foundation and the Australian Institute of International Affairs for organizing this wonderful meeting. I'm very pleased and humbled that I've been invited to share my ideas with renowned scholars, and His Excellency is here, leading universities and research centers from South Korea. I think Australian leaders in international affairs and think tanks are presented here too. So I'm really pleased, and I look forward to your feedback, because the paper I'm going to present today has been published recently in CSCAP Regional Security Outlook for 2015. I just added a couple of paragraphs here, but I'll briefly introduce it, and I hope Korean colleagues already have it printed by Korea Foundation. So what I want to focus on my paper is Korea, because it's at the very center of Northeast Asia, not only geographically. If you look at the map of Northeast Asia, of course it's a natural bridge linking the continent with the islands of Japan. It's a cultural link. It's a conduit which served like that for thousands of hundreds of years. And this natural bridge was always in the focus of conquerors and geostrategists for many centuries. It continues like that, particularly with the unfortunate events of the 20th century. The deep roots of the current conflict, which continues in Northeast Asia. Northeast Asia is a very problematic region. Right? It's a region which is missing regionalism. Right, we know it doesn't have, like Professor Lee just mentioned, there's no security mechanism, there's no economic forums which would only focus on Northeast Asia. Something is missing, and I believe that the roots for this problematic, or rather regrettable, state of affairs in Northeast Asia lie in the 20th century. The colonial past, which Japan is usually attributed to, the division of Korea, to which we indebted the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union and the United States arbitrarily decided to divide Korea. And the Korean War is a result of it. So there won't be peace, there won't be prosperity, there won't be agreement on anything in Northeast Asia without achieving peace and agreement and reconciliation in Korea proper. That's the core of my paper. Because the Korean conflict continues to beset the Korean people. Koreans divided by the Korean War. It's ideological conflict, of course, but we probably can look even earlier, from 1945, when both Koreas were divided, and 1948, when two Korean states came into existence. Both Koreas were really paranoid about each other, about each other's intentions. Seoul and Pyongyang were really confused about what may happen next. Should we attack first and unify the nation, or the other side is going to do the same? So this uncertainty avoidance translated into continuing paranoia. Even after the armistice agreement, the Korean War, which was going on for 3 years, finished inconclusively. The armistice agreement, which persists, is now like very strange state of affairs. Neither war nor peace, which means like who knows what happens next. This all creates tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Both states overspend on defense. When we see that North Korea spends at least 15% of its GDP on defense. South Korea continues to increase its budget spending on defense. Apparently from this year onward until 2017, South Korea is going to increase its defense spending 7.3% annually out of uncertainty what may happen next. Clearly it was stated that North Korea's intention, change of environment, change of security posture of North Korea with the development of nuclear weapons, the development of ballistic missile technologies. Of course, South Korea needs to spend more. And American friends and allies are ready and happy to have the allies to spend more. But North Koreans are going to spend more too, because China is also providing North Korea with assistance, whether it's in the forms of fuel or dual usage technologies. Yes, it still makes North Korea even a scarier neighbor, not only for South Korea, but for Japan as well. Even for the United States, North Korea these days promises to start hitting the homeland territories in the United States with its ballistic missiles. Well, whether it's technically possible or not, we don't know, but North Korea is definitely investing in development of weapons of mass destruction. Not only to defeat the United States, they can't defeat the United States, but to use it as a psychological deterrence measure. Because just one nuclear device is much stronger than this 1.2 million people who are standing poised at the demilitarized zone. One missile, intercontinental ballistic missile, is the perfect insurance against what happened in Iraq or Libya. Right? Those who voluntarily declined to and refused to have their nuclear and ballistic missile programs. So how long with this security dilemma going to persist? I think it's going to continue indefinitely until something changes, and this change has to be very radical, very drastic. What can change? Well, in my paper, I'll just look at the imperfect alliances, which are not going to save neither South Korea nor North Korea from potential mistake. If somebody pushes the wrong button, somebody miscalculates each other's intentions, the Armageddon on the Korean Peninsula can easily turn into endgame for the whole region, where China is poised against U.S. Assets in the region, but Japan will be happily hitting and shooting down the North Korean missiles, which North Koreans believe they're simply for peaceful purposes, like weather or agriculture monitoring satellites, which they need. We live in the 21st century. We need some new technologies. North Koreans don't want to stay to be left behind. Aren't North Koreans allowed to have this? Well, of course, United Nations Security Council, the three Security Council resolutions in place which prohibit North Koreans from developing nuclear power, missiles, rocket technologies. And, of course, it's not going to make North Koreans happier. Again, so it's not only that North Korea has to change, but I believe South Korea has to learn some lessons from the continuing standoff again. But again, with the relations between South Korea and the United States are strong, but again, that's full of uncertainty. Even the transfer of wartime operation control, which was supposed to happen next year, is now postponed until 2020 sometime. So the alliances are strong, but they tell us more about uncertainty and about war preparation rather than building peace and strong relations in the region, not only in Korea. But if you want to improve and build good, effective economic and, of course, security relations in the region, we have to look at Korea, the very center, the pivot of Northeast Asia. I believe, and in my paper, I just tried to emphasize the importance of the Korean Peninsula to be, of course, nuclear free, right? Yes, North Korea must drop its nuclear ambition. But how can North Korea drop its nuclear ambitions while it understands that South Korean's allies, both across the Tsushima Strait and across the Pacific, are all aiming at North Korea? They can't drop their nuclear capability without giving some proper assurance that they're not going to be attacked, that the regime is not going to be changed. Yeah, I know the regime is repugnant, but Kim's family is not ready to step down voluntarily. The survival of the regime is the raison d'etre for North Korean regime, just its existence. It's not going to easily take the trust-building promises of South Korea, as Professor Che just said, that from the outset, from the beginning, North Koreans rejected this trust politic of President Park because it doesn't suit them anything. How can you build trust without ending the Korean War? So I believe that to achieve the zero nuclear regime in Korea, first of all, in the region probably ideally too, we need to end the Korean War first, because the Korean War is at the very foundation, at the very base, is the core of the current conflict in Northeast Asia. The Korean War, which is, peace in Korea is very fragile. Right? Any moment it may turn into a bloodshed. And we saw it in 2010, first under when Chonan was sank, second when Yeonpyeongdo was shelled. Who knows? I'm surprised South Korea didn't retaliate. Why didn't South Korea retaliate, by the way? It could, But I believe we had a talk. We were in Pyongyang in 2007. Daniel was there. We had this discussion with North Korean academics from what was the organization? Social science organization of Union of Social Scientists, and they asked us why American troops are still in South Korea. South Koreans must be very confident about their own security, and we were not that sure about that. Right? So we said, well, probably not. South Koreans still, well, they value human life. They're more focused on the economy, on trade, rather than spending hundreds of thousands of lives of their soldiers defending the demilitarized zone. So there's a great deal of disagreement, and it comes from lack of communication, lack of understanding. And without understanding, without communication, there simply cannot be any reconciliation. To reconcile, that's the core, that's the main goal for the Korean nation, I believe. Trust, building trust is important, but you still can't just build trust like that. You have to build, you have to start building trust by trusting people. But if you don't trust, how can you build trust? Impossible. So my conclusion in this in my paper is that building first of all the Korean War must be finished. How to build how to end the Korean War? Well, this is the $100 million question, because both governments are adamant to claim their sole legitimacy on the peninsula. Is the Republic of Korea prepared to recognize the Democratic People's Republic of Korea? I don't think so. It's against the constitution. It cannot. North Korea is not prepared to accept the existence of South Korea, of Republic of Korea either. That means that we cannot end the Korean War. Without ending the Korean War, we can't build the nuclear weapons-free zone. There are already 8 nuclear-free zones around the world, in Antarctica, in Southeast Asia. One nuclear-free zone in Northeast Asia would be a perfect solution to the current tensions. Right? And without building this confidence that either in North Korea or nor in South Korea they're going to be nuclear or won't be any nuclear weapons, we cannot see Korea truly truly free, to truly neutral. And that's what I also emphasize in my paper. I believe that the solution to this Northeast Asian standoff is truly non-aligned North Korea. Say where South Korea is now locked in this alliance with the United States, like North Korea is locked in this alliance with China. China cannot survive without North Korea. Well, at least with its Cold War mentality. Am I right?
No.
Right. So China is doing everything possible to keep North Korea intact, stable. Well, they understand if North Koreans start playing with some sort of reforms, well, North Korea is going to collapse, and there will be one big unhappy Republic of Korea, full of social problems and tensions and criminal activities and gangs from North Korea. So they don't want to destabilize North Korea in any possible way, because they know US allied Republic of Korea is bad news for Beijing. Equally bad news for Russia as well, because Russia these days is so anti-American, so anti-Western, it's under sanctions, so Russia is now preparing to do everything possible to stabilize North Korea as well. I already talked to Ambassador Kim about a possible visit of Kim Jong-un to Moscow. I don't believe it's going to happen. Kim Jong-un is too vain to go to Moscow with all other heads of states and with Park Jong-hee. A group picture with Park Jong-hee. Park Geun-hye is not going to be, the daughter of Park Jong-hee is not going to be digested well in North Korean propaganda media. So I think that we're back in Cold War era, something where we were in before 1991. Everything is now set for major confrontation, possibly nuclear one, because now these days the difference between 91 and 2014 is that North Koreans do have nuclear weapons. They have ballistic missiles. It's unlikely that North Korean regime is going to be toppled because of that. So the story will go on. It will continue, and China and Russia will do everything possible to keep North Korea safe from any invasion and probably from unification. Because unification under these terms, where say North Korea collapses, South Korea absorbs North Korea, is like German scenario, is not going to fit the interests of Moscow and Beijing. And well, both Russia and China are nuclear powers. So it looks like ending the Korean War would be the only feasible scenario for this. But as long as the Cold War mentality persists in policymakers' heads, as long as the North and South Koreans are not prepared to reconcile and build trust, and we clearly see that trust politics have failed, we will see Northeast Asia continuing, languish in this deplorable geostrategic lock, where economy will again be hostage of these developments. We talked about the potential of pipeline between, like, from Russia to South Korea via North Korean territory. Well, Russia has already big issue with Ukraine, building the pipelines via Ukraine to Europe, and realizing that the intermediary state, which provides this delivery of gas, has much more power than any either deliverer or the beneficiary of the energy. Same with electricity. Without firm peace, without peace agreement, I don't think any of these projects are going to be fulfilled. And the sooner Koreans themselves realize, understand the importance of being neutral and conflict free, the safer and more prosperous the whole region of Northeast Asia is going to become. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very well said, and very forthright too, which is good.